You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. I'm Ava Berardi. Today in juvenile court, prosecutors outlined the initial case against a 15-year-old suspected of firing into a crowd at Seattle Center on Sunday. KUOW's Amy Radel reports.
The shootout left three people dead and five more injured. A 15-year-old accused of taking part waived his right to appear in juvenile court Monday. His mother and father attended the hearing virtually. The teenager was arrested on suspicion of three counts of assault in the first degree for three of the shooting victims who were injured, including a two-year-old who's still hospitalized. Court documents allege that one of the shooting victims was a participant and died after being detained. Seattle police are looking for another unknown suspect as well. I'm Amy Radel reporting.
Several communities in King County have temporarily banned the siting of large-scale battery systems. But in Snohomish County, a utility is getting ready to power up Washington's first and so far largest such system this fall. Snohomish PUD says it selected the best technology available and is building on utility-owned land in Arlington. KNKX environment reporter Bellamy Palethorpe went to check it out.
The batteries are locked up inside rows and rows of vented white lockers on a gravel lot. They're made by Tesla. They're designed to store excess power from sources like wind and solar that are clean but not always generated when you need them. Gabriel Duran is supervising the construction for design firm Ameresco. An electrical engineer who specializes in solar systems, he says this is his fifth battery energy storage project and his first in Washington.
I wasn't involved in the selection of this particular technology, but as I've learned about it, I think it's fantastic, especially the computer system managing it and all the data that we can both interpret and respond to is pretty cutting edge.
The system is designed to add capacity to the grid, about enough electricity to run tens of thousands of homes for a few hours. And it'll help Snohomish County PUD keep power affordable because the utility won't have to buy as much on the open market, says program manager Jessica Sparr.
When we have those significant weather events, either a cold snap or a heat wave, and we have to purchase that really high peak demand power, this will help smooth that out a little bit more and keep those costs low.
She says the Arlington project will probably be the state's largest only for a little while. There's one under construction in Sumner, Pierce County, that's eight times as large. I'm Bellamy Palethorpe reporting.
Measles cases are once again on the rise in Clark County. As OPB's Eric Newman reports, six new infections of the virus were identified on Friday.
The recent cases follow a seventh case identified on July 22nd at the Vancouver Clinic Salmon Creek. They all involve people under age 18. So far, one has been hospitalized. Kim Taves is the Clark County Infectious Disease Director.
No one should feel like, well, I'm sure it's not in my network, right? Everyone potentially could be exposed to it if they got unlucky.
Measles is a highly contagious virus that's spread through the air when a person sneezes or coughs. The increase in infections is happening both locally and nationally. The Clark County infections so far this year are the highest number since a previous outbreak in the county in 2019. I'm Eric Newman reporting.
More than 10,000 people went to South Pacific County's Seoul Hospital for medical care last year, according to a new report. Ocean Beach Hospital in El Waco operates on a tight margin, but this increase in visitation did not translate to a significant boost in the hospital's bottom line. While revenue went up slightly from 2024, expenses rose with an investment in staffing and equipment. Along with its bolstering of primary care services, Ocean Beach Hospital has worked on a slate of projects funded by a voter-approved bond measure in 2023. Work on an express care clinic is ongoing. The clinic will connect to the El Waco Clinic and will offer care for urgent, non-life-threatening injuries and illnesses. The district estimated it had over $4 million in uncompensated costs last year, which includes a small percentage of charity care. The district also covered community programs, wellness initiatives, and a Medicaid shortfall of over $500,000. The story comes to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer. Online at chinookobserver.com. Southwest Washington Congresswoman Marie Glusenkamp-Perez maintains a sizable fundraising advantage over her challengers leading up to August's primary election. The campaign for the Democrat reported it raised more than $1.5 million between April and June. No campaigns for any other candidate for the seat have come close in the year's second quarter. Of the $1.6 million Glusenkamp-Perez received in the past 3 months, more than $500,000 came from individuals who donated directly to her campaign. More than $150,000 came from political committees or PACs tied to trade, industry, or professional associations for the first time. The largest infusion of funds came to the campaign from the MGP Victory Fund, a joint committee between Glusenkamp-Perez, her leadership political action committee, or PAC, and the Washington State Democratic Central Committee. Glusenkamp-Perez's closest challenger, State Senator John Braun, a Republican, reported raising over $700,000 in the most recent 3 month stretch. Of that amount, close to $400,000 came via direct donations from individuals. PACs donated just over $200,000 to Braun. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Chinook Observer, online at chinookobserver.com. The number of homeless folks in some far northern California counties appears to be decreasing, according to a count conducted in January. Jefferson Public Radio's Jane Vaughn reports.
Humboldt County saw a drop of almost 200 homeless people compared to 2024. Robert Ward with the county's Department of Health and Human Services says there's good news in this data, but it's harder to get accurate counts on folks living outside than those in shelters.
We see a big drop in family homelessness. Not really sure what's driving that. You know, some of the family homelessness drop, a lot of it came from shelters and transitional housing, where we think, you know, we have a very accurate count.
It's also difficult to know what factors caused those decreases. Ward says their work continues, trying to get people off the streets and into housing. Trinity, Glenn, Colusa, and Tehama counties also saw drops in their number of homeless folks compared to last year, although Tehama counted only sheltered people this year. I'm Jane Vaughn reporting.
Farm workers in eastern Oregon are coping with extreme heat and wildfire smoke. Monica Carrillo-Casas reports aid groups are working to help reduce health risks.
In an onion field near Ontario on Friday, the land stretching out behind Rosa Mendoza disappears into smoke.
Por necesidad, no más que nada, tenemos que trabajar.
She says being out in unhealthy air is a necessity. She has to work. That's why community organizers like Eddie Melendres with the Oregon Food Bank are coming to her. Melendres pulls up to a field entrance in a white pickup filled with water, masks, and other supplies.
I want to show the community, like, as much as I can, that these people are very important. They're the backbone of this community.
Melendres says nonprofit groups from across Oregon and Idaho are distributing supplies to farm workers near the state line as smoky conditions continue. I'm Monica Carrillo-Casas, reporting.
Local and regional news is brought to you by our news partners and by the KMUN News Team. For more local and regional news, go to kmun.org/news. What in the World from the BBC is up next, followed by the American Democracy Minute. You're listening to KMUN.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. The lower courts have largely blocked President Trump's March executive order on elections as violations of the Constitution's Elections Clause. July 27th, his administration asked the more friendly U.S. Supreme Court to weigh in on an appeals court decision blocking the U.S. Postal Service from verifying citizenship for mail-in voters. Attorneys general from 23 states challenged the president's order, arguing the Constitution grants the states and Congress authority over elections. June 25th, a federal district court judge blocked the U.S. Postal Service from implementing key sections of the order, writing, "The Constitution does not grant the president any specific powers over elections." The judge enjoined the administration from implementing sections 2 and 3 of the executive order. The administration appealed. July 25th, a three-judge First Circuit panel ruled 2-1 to uphold the district court decision. July 27th, the administration appealed again, arguing the lower courts erred because the USPS plan had yet to be finalized and states couldn't claim injury. The states argued previously that the executive order forced them to, quote, expend time and resources now to prevent chaos, confusion, and disenfranchisement. With the midterms imminent, expect a response from the court shortly. We've linked the previous decisions and the latest appeal at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.